Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Texans up one, but here's Brandon McManus. 45-yard attempt, left hash mark. Snap is down. The kick is up, and it's good. The Texans lose as time expires. 24-22 to the Green Bay Packers. Heartbreaker at Lambeau Field.
Our keys to victory this week was executing and finish. Like, we didn't execute well enough. All the way across the board, we didn't execute well enough, and we didn't finish the game. Like, credit to the Packers. They finished it the right way, made the plays when they needed to make it, and they finished the game the right way. But for us to play how we play, you know, offensively is just not good enough for us. We have to play better. Guys have to execute better, have to step up.
Yeah, that's an understatement. That is an understatement. Welcome in, everybody. Happy Monday to all of you. Happy Reaction Monday to all of you. Ain't all that happy, but hope you had a good weekend. We are here for you. Seth and I are here for the next couple hours. We're here for you all day long here on Sports Radio 610. After the Texans, I have a hard time saying let one get away. They were lucky to be in this game considering how they played offensively. They did something that only 6% of teams have done in this category since 2010, lost a game where they were plus +3 in turnover margin. 94% Ooh. Of the time, teams win the game when they are plus +3 in turnover margin since 2010. Thanks to Texans Cap for that stat. The gloves are off this morning, man. How you doing this morning, my friend?
So the Texans came out and said, listen, if we learned one thing from the Astros, it's that you can't let them count you out just because there's only a 6% chance. People wanted to say, hey, the Astros can't make the playoffs with a bad start like this. Texans said, hey, you can't lose. All these people are saying you can't lose a game where you're plus +3 in the turnover ratio.
Yeah.
We're going to do it. We're going to go out and do it.
Man. So let me back up. Let me start off by issuing a PSA right now to the family members of any of the Texans' offensive linemen yesterday. I'm talking about the Tunsil family, the Green family, the Scruggs family, the Mason family, and the family of Titus Howard. You've been issued the PSA at 6:02 that this is not going to go well for your family member today. This is not going to go well at all. And quite frankly, it's long overdue. They've not been good this year. They've really not been good over the course of the last year and a half. There have been fits and starts here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But yesterday was an abomination. Yesterday was an embarrassment. They should all be embarrassed over what happened yesterday with that offensive line. I saw a cut-up before the game on the NFL Network where they were talking about the Texans and the Packers, and they were showing all the free runners that just run right at C.J. Stroud throughout games this season. And I said, man, that is really jarring because I don't see that happening to a lot of other quarterbacks. And boy, do I see C.J. Stroud. The gist of the whole thing was this is the magic that C.J. Stroud can make with his right arm with this janky-ass offensive line in front of him. Unfortunately, the magic ran out yesterday. That was a complete abomination, an embarrassment. They're going to get their quarterback killed. I don't know what the issue is up front. I don't think it's physical. I think it's mental. Chris Strausser is finally catching some strays for what appears to be, at a minimum, a very mediocre or horribly coached offensive line, or an offensive line that's just not grasping the message that's being handed to them on a weekly basis, because That was anxiety-inducing yesterday. I am so nervous about what could happen to C.J. Stroud. This offensive line looks like they can't handle the most basic of blitzes right now, Seth.
No, and they do things, too, that because the offensive line can't be trusted, some of the protections they're in does end up putting stress on the tight ends and the running backs because they have to block big people and to make up for the remedial full-turn protections that the offensive line will have to employ. And it's just bad. It's really bad. I mean, like, this is where we are. This is after facing the Packers, and I know that there's a lot of people out there who get really upset. I don't know how these people exist. They get really upset after you lose a close game because, hey, fellas, they were out there and they were competing. No. Were they really? They were plus +3 in the turnover ratio, and they were barely hanging on, and they got worse in the second half. This is a mediocre offense right now. Like, there's no way to slice it. Scoring, otherwise, whatever you want to look at it, it's a mediocre, middling offense, and yet they're being paid a whole lot of money to be mediocre and middling, and that includes the offensive line. The offensive line is just a hodgepodge of misery from one play to the next, almost without theme or concept. They're inconsistently inconsistent. You can't even pick which guy's going to score. One play might be Titus Howard just falling on his ass and then somehow looking to the officials for help. I don't know. I have to go back and watch that play. He fell on his bottom side, and then he looked to the officials. I'm guessing he thought the defensive end was offsides. I don't know what to say about it anymore either, Sean, because I know what the fans say, which is, how is this every year? Different coaches, different GMs. How is the offensive line, almost for every year of the Texans' existence, other than a precious small window in the Gary Kubiak days when you had multiple offensive linemen going to the Pro Bowl?
Yeah.
You know, back to the Dwayne Brown and Wade Smith and Chris Myers in those days. It's an ongoing headache, and it's not an impressive offense.
No.
There's impressive individuals on the offense, but it's not an impressive offense whatsoever right now.
No, it's not. And the excuse before was, they can't run the football. Well, they ran the football yesterday, but I'm not giving the offensive line full offensive line credit for 115-yard rusher. If Damian Pierce is getting the 25 carries in that game yesterday and not Joe Mixon, it's 25 carries for 62 yards, not 25 carries for 115 yards like Mixon had yesterday.
And most of Mixon's yardage came in the first half. The second half, it really wasn't, I don't think, as much about adjustment by the defense as much as anticipation by the defense. When they started to realize, okay, this is what the Texans are doing. Okay, and you do some nice, you guys think you're having fun pulling guards and having tight ends block defensive ends, and that's all good. But now we're just going to physically destroy you, because we've seen it. And in the second half, that's when some guys got really trucked physically, just disused. I mean, the Kenyon Green experiment, it's been fun. Sure, the Texans could have drafted two much better football players, Kyle Hamilton or the
Jordan Davis.
I don't know how the defense. Jordan, yeah, I don't Jordan know how Jordan Davis. Davis is doing.
He's doing better than Kenyon Green, I can promise you.
Yeah, Kenyon Green's just a mess.
Yeah.
So, and as people have pointed out, as aggressive as the Texans were in free agency and in the offseason, they really didn't do anything to bolster the interior offensive line other than say, let's see. Let's see what they can do. They ain't doing much.
Yeah.
Not doing much.
Nope. Then the texts are already rolling in here, and they will all morning. 713-572-4610. That's my theme for this game. Now, we'll get to D'Amico Ryans in the second segment of the show. They did not lose this game because of the defense. I thought the defense, especially considering how undermanned they were, did a really good job yesterday. That's a good offense. They held them to 24 points, and three of them were on a last-second field goal. So I thought the defense did its job. I thought the special teams did their job. This game was lost up front in the trenches by the offense. And I think, for me, Seth, the most nerve-wracking thing, it's a couple of things. One, just the very basic part of the danger that C.J. Stroud has put in every Sunday behind this offensive line. He's the future of this team. And my hope is that when the future evolves, that these five men in front of him, at least most of them, will not be in front of him anymore. But that's where I go secondarily with this, is that I feel like if there were a position group on this team that were performing at this level in any other room in that building, there is, put the position coaches aside, like, these are grown men that need to look in the mirror at their performance right now, especially considering how much some of those guys are paid on the offensive line. If there were an issue in the wide receiver room, I think there are guys in the wide receiver room that would be able to self-police. I think if there were an issue in the running back room, the linebacker room, certainly. D-line room, absolutely. Secondary, for sure. That would self-police and say, hey, guys, let's get our act together here. Let's get our bleep together here. I don't feel that way about the offensive line room. I don't feel like the leader that they have in that room is not a guy who's grabbing them. I don't feel grabbing them by the lapels right now and go, guys, if we don't achieve our goals this year, we are going to be the reason for that.
He'd rather give advice on which designer to give you fancy velvet lapels.
That's exactly
for the sports coat that you're going to wear out to the club.
Somebody texted the show yesterday, the postgame show, and they said, this is a Chardonnay offensive line. We need beer drinkers on the offensive line.
Yeah. These guys are all getting ready for the Catalina wine mixer.
Yeah.
And they need to be going off to drink a Schlitz somewhere at some. You need to be. They need to be headbanging Trent Williams, Jason Kelce types, and instead, no. I feel like they're trying to find they're all upset over the demise of the skinny jean.
Yeah,
they're like, oh, I thought they were so formed.
It was a hell of an era. It was a good time. It was a hell of a time.
I'll tell you what, the Italians don't dress like this.
11 TFLs yesterday. That doesn't so for all the times where CJ almost got his head taken off. There were 7 pressures in this game, and it felt like there were 100 pressures in this game, according to, or maybe 7
of the time.
Yeah, 50%. Maybe so. Yeah. Maybe 7 QB hits. Maybe. Well, I know it was 4 sacks. He was pressured. Depending on which website you go to, I've seen anywhere from 48% to 55% of the time. Mm-hmm. It felt like more. So they were horrible protecting CJ Stroud. They also allowed 11 TF in a
11
game,
tackles for a loss,
in a
right?
game where a running back ran for 115 yards. There somehow were 11 TFLs in there, including 2 on the final drive of the game, the final series of downs of the game, where the Texans, I mean, D'Amico said they were trying to score. I just don't believe him. I believe they were playing for a field goal in that instance. 11 TFLs. You want some context on that? Third most in a game since 2000. That happened yesterday.
Third most in a game since 2000. Somebody yesterday, after I tweeted out that graphic, said, hey, all right, look, they were going against a good defense. That's it. Oh, I didn't realize that whenever you face a good defense, you allow the third most of something.
Shut the hell. That person should shut down their account.
Doesn't seem mathematically possible that every time you face a good defense, you should have the third most of something. Going back more than 2 decades. I don't think the math's on that one. Yeah. But still, point taken, I suppose.
If you feel
no,
that,
they're bad. And the other, the game management side of things, too. I mean, D'Amico and both D'Amico and Bobby Slowick, there's just something. I don't know how they regressed in terms of game management.
It's
bad. They were really impressive with game management last year.
Yep.
This year, they've regressed.
It's bad, and we're going to get into that in the next segment. There was some good. There was D'Amico Ryans, the defensive coordinator, I thought had a hell of a game yesterday. I thought that defense, they played well enough to win that game. They gave the offense multiple opportunities to try to win this game. D'Amico, the head coach and game manager, it might honestly in terms of decision making might have been his worst day as a Texans head coach.
And there's another guy too. Two guys that like you don't want to criticize, but Tank Dell. I mean,
who?
Tank Dell.
Who is he? Who's Tank Dell?
He's the guy that dropped the pass that hit
At the beginning of the game. That's
in
right.
the end zone.
I blacked that
right.
out. Yeah.
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 That was the thing. Like that could have been enough points there to
I'm mad today. I'm angry today. if you can. And this was a game that I don't want to put it this way, but I can't think of another way to put it going to break. I went into that game being okay with them with the possibility of losing this game because of how undermanned they were. It's an NFC game. They got the Colts next week. All those things. Not like that, man. Not like that. So you can tell where we're at with all this today. The tale of two D'Amicos yesterday. We have to get into this because there were some botches yesterday, man, that really cost the Texans. Thought the defense was great. I thought the game management was not. We'll get to that coming up next.
To Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Right, great to be with you on a Monday. It was not great yesterday. 24-22, the final score. We'll get into headlines next. Some interesting headlines going on around the league. Last night, during the day, the Deshaun Watson story is a big one if you missed it.
Oh.
Ruptured Achilles, done for the year. Yeah, we'll get into that in headlines. That is a deep cut headline up in Cleveland.
Those stories that I'm jealous that people get to talk about privately and make jokes on their own as opposed to, you know.
Well, and the crowd reaction yesterday is the big story up there.
It's unacceptable. I'll tell you. Yeah.
We'll get into it. We'll get into it in headlines. Let's stick with the Texans from yesterday. We dug into the offensive line. We'll give the offensive line a break. Offensive line, you can sit on the bench for a little bit. We'll get back to you in headlines. D'Amico Ryans yesterday. Close game. There's going to be a lot of scrutiny on coaching decisions in a game like that. When the coach is also the de facto defensive coordinator, he's the one calling the plays. There'll be a lot of scrutiny there, too. Let's start with the good. I thought the defense played. I thought the defense put forth a winning effort yesterday. Based on the performance of the defense, they should have won that game yesterday. They forced 3 turnovers. I thought, as we anticipated, Seth, especially after that texter pointed out who the head coach of this team is, a former elite-level linebackers coach in D'Amico Ryans, I thought Neville Hewitt and Jake Hansen, I thought they did a pretty good job yesterday, considered.
I mean, there were a lot of, I don't know how many slants Romeo Doubs caught over the middle. I think it was 47
felt
on
like
the day.
It, yeah.
There were some weaknesses over the middle of the field,
yes.
But in general, I think given the weaknesses of the defense and how they managed it, I thought they did a good job of it. And that's ultimately, you know, obviously you got to hold Jordan Love to not getting in field goal position there at the end of the game.
Yeah.
But I know that they're like, it feels like they were playing prevent defense. They did blitz a couple times on that drive. I think they had to manage with what they had and what they couldn't do. The pass rush came up big at times yesterday.
Yes.
But really, yeah, D'Amico and the game management at the end of the game, and then also D'Amico and not challenging the lateral were the two things where you're just like, what's going on here? Like, that was clearly a lateral. Call a timeout at least to wait and see.
Yep.
It's just there was some game management stuff that just didn't make a lot of sense.
We'll dig into those in a second here for sure. Here was D'Amico Ryans after the game. Again, we're on good D'Amico right now. D'Amico, de facto DC, A-plus yesterday. Not A-plus, probably an A-minus yesterday. Here was D'Amico Ryans on how did he feel the reserves played today?
Thought our guys did a good job defensively, but at the end of the day, we didn't make enough plays to win the game. No matter who's out there, there's no excuses. We got to play our technique the right way and make plays when it's our time to make a play.
Yeah, and they didn't. At the end of the game, you got to make a play at the end of the game if you want to win. This was a game that was going to be put on the defense. You could tell that very early on. For some perspective on how well the defense played, Seth, the snap counts came out. Aaron Wilson posted them this morning. These are the players that played 100% of the snaps for the Texans yesterday. Neville Hewitt, Eric Murray.
Ooh.
Let's see here. Jake Hansen, Jalen Petrie, Kalen Bullock, Derek Stingley Jr., and D'Angelo Ross.
Mm-hmm.
D'Angelo Ross, Jake Hansen, Neville Hewitt are among the players that played 100% of the snaps in the game yesterday.
Yeah, look, and D'Angelo Ross obviously was going to be a focal point of the Packers, whereas Mac Jones and the Patriots somehow decided to not test D'Angelo Ross.
Drake Maye.
You know what? They weren't as capable of testing D'Angelo Ross. That wide receiving core for the Packers is just a really good across the board, guys that can threaten, deep, yes. And it's not so easy just to disguise or protect defensively because they've got multiple guys that can do damage, obviously, we saw.
So I was happy with the defense. And honestly, it's particularly the linebacker thing made me feel better if indeed these, you know, if the Henry Toa's concussion situation is a serious one where it's a multi-week thing, if Aziz Alshire's knee would, you know, if that's a serious thing. We never know, and D'Amico would never say, you know, how much of the management of these injuries has to do with the fact that empirically the game coming up against Indy is a far more important game than Green Bay is a better team than Indianapolis. Make no mistake about that. But this Indianapolis home game, I mean, you can really put a stranglehold on the division this coming weekend by sweeping the Colts and being 3-0 in the division. So how much of it is trying to kind of play the middle on that whole thing? We don't know. But the defense played well yesterday. Okay, now I hate this because we got to get to this part because I love D'Amico Ryans and I think he's a really good head coach. This was, as a game manager, it was his worst day as the Texans head coach yesterday, in my opinion, based largely on two sequences in the game. The first one, as you pointed out, there was the play where it was called an incomplete pass. Jordan Love kind of flips a pass out to the left side to, I think it was Jaden Reed. And he didn't catch it. It was very questionable at game speed and to the naked eye if it was a lateral. The Texans played through the whistle like it was a lateral. I believe it was Foley Fatakasi who fell on the football. It was called an incomplete pass. Replay showed, in my mind, that it was at least worth throwing a challenge flag. I don't know if you would have won it. But the upside of winning it was that you get possession of the football. And number two, clearly there was some confusion going on defense
on the subsequent
play where throwing the flag would have been the equivalent of a timeout and you get the best of both worlds right there.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, the rules advisor thought that it was a lateral.
Team's territory, yeah.
You just didn't have and then we heard that D'Amico was jumping around on the sideline. So I thought at first maybe there was some kind of – some kind of issue with them not getting the challenge buzzer.
He was
or something.
Waving like a maniac over
so
there.
So there was something discombobulated yes. in the defensive backfield, yeah. and obviously it didn't work out. Yeah, that
scored
was,
a touchdown on that play.
That was frustrating. Yeah. And it was a clear recovery. People asking, yes, it was blown dead, but it was a clear recovery. So they, if it's a clear recovery, they would have given it to him.
Yep. Yeah. Then there's the end of the game. Texans got the ball with about 5-6 minutes left in the game. Did a fantastic job of matriculating down the field, burning clock. And I'll preface this by saying there have been times this year where I thought the game management has been good at the end of the game. I gave D'Amico Ryans, we have multiple segments on this show talking about what a masterclass the final drive against the Jaguars was. And it was. Everything from moving the ball to burning the clock to making the Jags use their timeouts, all of those things. Yesterday was an abomination. And look, some of it had to do with the fact that the offense itself was an abomination. I don't know what the message was. And this answer by C.J. Stroud we're going to hear in a second here is troubling to me. We'll get to that. But here was D'Amico Ryans after the game yesterday when he was asked about what was the goal of the final drive. What were you trying to do on the final drive?
Yeah, our goal is always to go score. That's our goal. Like, they did a good job of stopping us, didn't get in. So, obviously we didn't pass the ball well all day, right? So it wasn't good all the way around. We ran the ball well, thought Joe did a good job of running the ball. And, we needed to pass it. It was not good enough, starting with the protection. Now, if we can't protect, and that's going to be difficult for the quarterback to make the plays.
Okay, so go and score, there's no follow-up. Do you mean a touchdown? Do you mean a field goal? Do you, right? I mean, go and score.
Yeah.
I guess if there weren't this controversy over how it was handled, we would think he meant touchdown. Let me play CJ here real quick, Seth, then I'll get your thoughts on this. Because CJ was asked what was the goal on the final drive as well. Here was his answer.
I just try to execute every play that I can, that I get called. I really don't know the philosophy right then and there. Trying to talk to D'Amico, but I really can't get over there. But, what it seemed like we were trying to just run out the clock and then, try to kick a field goal before, we ended up, having to throw the ball on third down and, they would give them the ball back with a minute and like 40 left. So, I think that it was a good plan. Just got to execute better.
Okay.
Yeah,
before we get into the nooks and crannies of the play calls here, what are your thoughts on that?
So this is the thing, and going back and trying to figure out, all right, you're trying to grind clock here, obviously, running the ball. And I think maybe because they'd gotten down into the red zone in the first half and run the ball effectively, Joe Mixon had a couple of nice goal line or extreme red area runs down there.
In the first half, yes.
The mistake they made was thinking, oh, we're a team that can run the ball when we need to run the ball now.
Right.
But you're trying to, so I can't fault them for trying to run the ball and burn clock there. On that second 12 run, it was a combination of Kenyon Green and Titus Howard just getting destroyed by their individual guys. Yeah. I mean, there was nothing exotic about that. Kenyon Green got blown up into the backfield. The three technique came clean. Titus Howard made a vague stab at trying to block the defensive end, but he came down and made the tackle. It was just, it was bad all around. And then it's third and 15. Yeah. You've been trying to chew clock. The Packers have one more timeout that they would have had to use if you had run the ball again or show, run a draw or a screen or something like that. But they choose to throw an out short of the sticks that even if it had been whether it was a catch or not, was going to stop the clock because you're going out of bounds.
Yeah.
It didn't, and it doesn't. You were already in chip shot field goal range.
That doesn't get you. Kaimi can kick it from the 40-yard line. Yeah,
and I did. I said it right before. I tweeted it out in the moment. I was like, oh, he's going to pass, isn't he? Yeah. Which is that usually I've made excuses for Bobby Slowick in the past and D'Amico Ryans in these situations. I can't make an excuse for this.
No,
this is just the Packers end up preserving their timeout.
Yeah.
It's the field goal's not hardly any easier to make than it would have been right from there at the 17-yard line. I don't get it.
It made no sense throwing on third down when clearly your dual goal is, hey, maybe we can run the football and kind of grind this thing out. But at the very least, we're running the football and they're burning their timeouts.
Yeah,
you run a play where 99% of the outcomes stop the clock.
So
either he catches it and lands on the sideline and he's out of bounds, Tank Dell, or it's incomplete like it was and it stops. The only excusable passing in that situation, the only excusable outcomes are either literally taking a sack is a better outcome than what you did. C.J. Stroud would have been better off going into the fetal position, taking the sack and making the Packers burn their third timeout. Or you throw into the end zone and try to get a touchdown, which I don't think it would have been great clock management. It wouldn't have gone with the ethos of what you were doing on first and second down, but it would have been light years better of what you did. That was just stupid. And I don't know who's to blame for it. You know, maybe they had a certain play called and CJ checked into something else and he lost his mind in the moment and threw a pass that stopped the clock. But that combined with, even combined with Seth them kicking it out the back of the end zone on the kickoff. You know what I mean? Like that you're handing the ball at the 30. You know, that's where you feel the nerve-wracking of the touchback being at the 30 now is when you got to keep a team from kicking a field goal at the end of the game. You're like, ooh, that's not many first downs they need to get into field goal range.
Yeah,
the clock doesn't run. You know,
I hate that first down graphic because it just feels like such imminent doom.
Yeah.
The imaginary field goal,
the red stripe.
The spot to get to. Yeah.
The red stripe.
I hate it and I love it. It makes it way more interesting now because you can see the stakes that are involved.
Better when you're on offense.
Yeah, I miss the old days when you can't even really tell where they are.
Ignorance is bliss. Yeah. That was that. And then, I mean, I haven't even had my head hurt so bad from what they were doing on offense. I didn't have a chance to go see if D'Amico using any of their timeouts when the Packers got near field goal range made any sense. They have three timeouts left, the Texans. Should he have been calling timeouts? At that point, I was so infuriated by the offense, I didn't even care to think about it at that point.
Romo said, made some good points yesterday, but he also just made the thing that was bothering me the most was him gushing about Bobby Slowick and how brilliant he is. I'm just checking myself. I'm like, wait a second. Okay, they've got 40 yards passing at this point. We're deep into the fourth quarter, and you're telling me that somehow this is a brilliantly executed offensive game plan. What the hell are you talking about, Romo? He did make some points about the. This is an old Bill O'Brien thing, too. You got all these condensed formations, the tight ends, the wide receivers all down at the core of the offensive line, which is awesome if you've got guys who can actually line up and physically handle people, but they don't have those guys.
Yeah.
You have a quarterback who's really actually good against the blitz if given just a little bit. Spread things out so he can see the blitz coming from a mile away.
Right.
You know, like instead of it being a mass of humanity, it's like a tidal wave pouring over him.
No.
He has no chance because he's got six defenders collapsing the pocket all at once.
I thought it was significant that CJ started to show real frustration on the sideline yesterday. He threw his helmet down at one point on the sideline yesterday.
I approve of his frustration.
I do too, but it was jarring to me. He's not like that. You know, like that's how bad it is right now. You have CJ Stroud, seriously, one of the coolest customers in the business, throwing his helmet down in frustration on the sideline. That's how bad you suck. Offensive line right now.
It's frustrating as hell. This team justifiably had very high expectations offensively, and I would include that. If you look at the depth chart before the season, if you didn't have Nico Collins, it should still be a pretty good, damn good offense.
No question.
They are a mediocre offense right now.
Yes.
They're middle of the pack in just about everything.
Yep.
Scoring, all of it. Like, they are a tepid offense.
And where would they be?
And there's no excuse for it.
No, and where would they be without Joe Mixon?
I feel bad, man, for all the people that were way more skeptical of Bobby Slowick than I was in the offseason. You and I wondered about the run game and are they going to actually put together a good run game.
Yep.
That was Bobby Slowick's big test. He's failing that miserably.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what we did say that all offseason. Yeah. Bobby Slowick has to show that he can engineer a good rushing offense before he keeps getting all this love as a potential head coach candidate, and he's failing miserably in that regard.
Bloom is off the rose, no doubt. All right, headlines.
Did it in his hometown.
Circle, Green Bay.
He had to, like, his high school teachers were watching
that's
that.
That's true. That's embarrassing.
Some of them were like, I always knew he was up. I always knew he'd never make it.
Bobby didn't come home with the team. He sat in detention last night, actually. He stayed up there, and they put him in detention.
He had to go clean up toilet paper out of the trees of high school football
He had to write 1,000 times on the chalkboard, I will not let C.J. Stroud get hit 15 times. Headlines.
Ooh, that's my afternoon project now. With my new video editing skills, I'm gonna put Bobby Slowick's head on Bart Simpson's.
Oh, that's a good tease.
And
I like
have him,
that.
Yeah.
Good tease. We'll get to the Texans again in headlines. We've got a World Series in place, college football from over the weekend, and Deshaun Watson out for the season. We will get some interesting audio from that. That's coming up next in headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Texans up one, but here's Brandon McManus, 45-yard attempt, left hash mark. Snap is down, the kick is up, and it's good. The Texans lose as time expires. 24-22 to the Green Bay Packers. Heartbreaker at Lambeau Field.
Our keys to victory this week was executing and finish. We didn't execute well enough. All the way across the board, we didn't execute well enough, and we didn't finish the game. Credit to the Packers. They finished it the right way, made the plays when they needed to make it, and they finished the game the right way. But for us to play how we play, you know, offensively, is just not good enough for us. We have to play better. Guys have to execute better, have to step up.
All right, that was D'Amico Ryans leading into his press conference yesterday, following yesterday's 24-22 loss. That was one they could have stolen. I don't feel like they deserved to win the game or anything, Seth. I don't think the three turnovers are what kept them in that game. The offensive line is what lost the game.
You know, I was trying to think about this from the Packers' perspective, though, too, because the Packers dried up offensively in the second half as well.
Yep.
And I think that this is probably... So I was trying to think of it from the Packers' perspective. There was certain ugliness, and obviously they came up with the field goal when it mattered, and kudos to them. But I think that also from a different perspective, if the Texans had won this game, I think it would still very much feel like a lot of the victories they've had where in the morning you're like, I know they won, but listen, this is not sustainable. You're not going to beat the genuinely awesome teams playing this way. We would have been apologizing for being so negative after a victory. And I think that's not just me trying to act like I'm more virtuous or something. That's just the way it's been all year long.
I don't know that I would have, because I don't know that I would have been apologetic all about it. And here's why. Let's pretend Brandon McManus misses the field goal at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Okay. And they win 22-21. The difference between that game and all the other close games where we've been nitpicking is that they were clearly the better team that allowed these teams to stay in the game. Yesterday, they were the team that was being allowed to stay in the game by the Packers with the three turnovers, I thought.
Yeah.
And with, you know, maybe allowing a pass rush. And here's the big thing. None of those other games did I feel like C.J. Stroud had a chance of getting killed on the field. You know, there have been free runners at C.J. all year long, but it hasn't. Yesterday felt like he was in serious danger throughout the game yesterday.
And it's felt, I mean, there's times, too, where the blitz pickup is so bad. We're seeing some of the old-school style QB hits that you don't see that much anymore.
Yep.
Just the guy completely standing like a statue, and he gets hit from the blind side. And some of that, it all goes back to at various times. All right, you can blame Dalton Schultz on that one where the blitzer came free, but they're also in this full-turn protection, which is something that you do a lot when your offensive line can't be trusted.
Yep.
And it does put a lot more pressure on the tight ends and the running backs. But and certainly, the tight ends and the running backs are not innocent or without blame in some of the pass protection issues. It's just that the guys whose bread and butter it is that are supposed to make it easier for those guys, no, they're Slowick's putting himself in a position where he's having to have tight ends and running backs help out the offensive line.
Yeah, and it's not good, man. It's not good. All right, we'll get back to the Texans top of the hour. We'll kind of relive some of the moments, good and bad, from the game through the voice of Mark Vandermeer, play-by-play man extraordinaire. We'll do Acknowledge Me at 7:20. There are some performances worth acknowledging from that game and around the world of football from over the weekend. The Deshaun Watson story is a big one today, not because he was playing well at all this year, mostly because he was playing poorly and probably was going to be benched at some point. Well, the football gods took care of that one yesterday, I guess. He ruptured his Achilles in the first half of the football game against the Bengals, and it was at home. And evidently, there were a lot of Browns fans that were pretty happy about that. I don't know what percentage of them were. It was enough to get Myles Garrett talking about it after the game, Jameis Winston talking about it. We'll get to all of those guys tomorrow on the show. With 2 hours, we've just got so much text and stuff. Here was Kevin Stefanski, though, with the update on Watson following the game and his reaction to fans cheering the injury.
Are you able to say yet if Deshaun's injury is believed to be season ending?
I think let's get the test to confirm, but that's what it looks like.
Coach Miles just talked about, you know, the disappointment he had in the fans after Deshaun went down. They were kind of booing and some cheering, even calling for DTR. What was your perspective of that whole situation?
Yeah, I don't think it's ever okay to cheer when someone's injured. I'm sure it's not every person in that building doing that, but that's disappointing.
All right, so there you go.
When I heard that Deshaun Watson got injured, I thought to myself, oh, that's going to be an interesting crowd reaction. And what I would say is...
You're right.
This is a situation where it's perfectly fine to just sit on the fence. I'm not going to make a big moral, grandiose argument about how you shouldn't boo injured people when it comes to Deshaun Watson. Some people are going to boo him for a variety of reasons, but I'm also not going to, like Myles Garrett, stand up and say, quote, he's been a model citizen through college and most of the pros.
You could tell with Myles that he got out over his skis a little bit when he said most of the pros.
Yeah.
As soon as I saw the beginning of that sentence and I listened to it, I'm like, okay, how does he get himself out of this one? Because he has not been a model citizen.
At one point, he did also say, can't judge him for what he does off the field or on the field because I can't throw stones from my glass house.
Yeah.
So, he's hedging a little bit there, and he understood. But it's, it is what it is. There's going to be people that boo him in that situation. This is not the moment I'm going to stand up and be like, hey, you people, what are you doing?
And I thought about it this morning, too, as I was listening to a lot of the reaction to it from up in Cleveland on the national shows as well. Deshaun is such a unique situation because he's not just a major, major, major contractual bust. He's not just a bad trade. He was sued by a couple dozen women for some really bad stuff.
And he settled those lawsuits,
and the league suspended him, and in the process... provided commentary on it to where the judge said, oh yeah, he did these things.
And the same thing they said in Texas, which is that basically, okay, the laws are kind of finicky and weird on this, and there's nothing we can do about it.
But
the NFL judge said, oh yeah, he did this, my hands are tied and this is the punishment. I'm not gonna waste breath trying to defend you reap what you sow, okay?
Yeah.
You reap what you sow.
Yep.
Should you boo somebody when they're injured on the field? Probably no, but you reap what you sow.
There are some interesting football questions that come out of this, I think, and we'll save that for tomorrow. We'll retire Deshaun from the Pettycast tomorrow as well. There's no more reason to kick him around. I think there's some really interesting football questions for the Browns as to what the best approach now is for the season. Do they tank and just get a high pick? They're 1-6 now. Their chances of making the postseason are, according to the broadcast yesterday from London, would be nil. Literally, they put nil on the screen for the loser of yesterday's Jacksonville-New England game, who has the same record as the Browns now, New England.
They have to trade Greg Newsome. I know that much. If there's one thing I know about the Browns, they need to trade one of their stud defensive backs to the Texans.
That would be nice. Yeah, or Delpit, the safety. That would be good, too. The World Series will be the Dodgers and the Yankees. We'll talk about that slightly in the 7 o'clock hour. Oregon is your new number one in the college football poll. Which I'm sure your child is thrilled about, Seth.
Yes. My non-sports fan college student who was really put out by the fact that college game day was set up in front of the anthropology building. Hey, Dad, what's this college game time or something? What's going on?
Yeah, game time. That's great. All right, those are your headlines. Of course, Texas loses to Georgia.
Favorite is sending updates on the Oregon scores.
Oh, the troll dad. I love that. All right, let's get back to the Texans yesterday. We love doing this in wins. We love doing it in losses too, because Mark Vandermeer does such a great job on these games. Voice of Vandy. We're going to relive the high points and the low points, the big twists and turns in a game full of them. There were 7 lead changes, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, in that game yesterday. We will relive the crazy crooked highway of the Texans' loss to the Packers coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, Texans lose yesterday 24-22. I hesitate to say they let this one get away. I thought they were lucky to be hanging around in this game. Kudos to the defense for giving the offense the opportunities it gave them. The offense failed this team yesterday, specifically the offensive line. We'll talk plenty about them, I'm sure, as we relive some of the magic of this game through the voice of Mark Vandermeer. So let's take you through some of the twists and turns yesterday. We will acknowledge people at 7:20-ish on the show today, so stay tuned for that. But man, yesterday's loss to the Packers sets up a big one against the Colts. Win yesterday against the Dolphins sets up a big one this weekend at NRG. We'll talk about that later as well. So let's start yesterday. This started early. This was good to see. Big question coming into the game: how is this linebacking crew going to perform? No Azeez Al-Shaair, no Henry Toa-Toa. And right off the bat, Jalen Petrie, quasi-linebacker, half linebacker, half safety, but Neville Hewitt, replacement linebacker, combine on a big play.
Hanson close to the line. Love takes the snap, fires, and it's picked off. Hewitt to his left, 40, 30, 20, cutting inside the 20 of Green Bay, and Neville's got the ball inside the 15-yard line on the pick.
So that was big, man, and that was, you know, D'Amico always talks about starting fast. You cannot start any faster than that.
No, that was a very fast start, Sean.
Interception, damn near a pick six from Neville Hewitt, sets you up with room service in the red zone, and the crowd gets the air taken out of it right away.
And it was one of the reasons that I had predicted this game would be 22-21, which that was the score for a little while. I thought it was going to be 22-21 Packers, but one of the big factors in that was that Jordan Love makes some just curiously horrendous decisions.
Yeah.
And Neville Hewitt, to his credit, was there to capitalize on it. But, man, Jordan Love, it's frustrating because he does some really smart things. Really, really smart things. But when it comes to the judgment side of things, he's boneheaded at times.
Yeah.
So he's and the Texans capitalized on it.
Yeah, I think yesterday's game, these are two really good football teams overall. Like, I know the Texans, we're mad about the Texans this morning, and the offensive line certainly is not emblematic of what the rest of the team is here. The offensive line stinks right now. I thought we saw with these two teams that are considered, I think, at worst, fringe Super Bowl contenders, if not actual Super Bowl contenders, I think we saw in full view what could keep them from getting to the Super Bowl. And for the Texans, it's the offensive line. And for the Packers, it's Jordan Love's carelessness with the football sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think those are the Achilles heels of these two teams. Now, you mentioned that we see some good things from Jordan Love as well, like this touchdown pass to Kraft here to put the Packers on the board.
On third and four, Love shotgun throwing over the middle, and it's caught. Touchdown. It looked like a Texan had a shot at a pick, but Kraft came down with it in the end zone as the Packers take the lead.
Yeah, it was Kalen Bullock had a shot at that.
Had a real, and that was another one. It was with Jordan Love, it's there's a little bit of a Jameis Winston effect where some of his really nice throws look a lot like his really bad throws. Yeah. I think that Kalen Bullock with a millisecond better anticipation on that.
Maybe.
Because there was nothing duped or silly about it. I mean, they were just sitting back there in zone, and he made the read on it, but he just wasn't quite quick enough. Yeah, that's where I think a year from now, Kalen Bullock might make that play. But the Packers are really good at spreading you out and getting their opportunities.
No doubt. So the Texans get the ball back. Now they're down 7-3, and it's early in the second quarter. They go 3-and-out. So now it's looking like this could be a game that starts to teeter a little bit. You're giving the Packers the ball back up 7-3. They've got a little momentum in this game. They're 3-and-out, and the Packers give the Texans a complete gift.
And here's Tommy launching. Nixon backpedaling inside the 20, and he's going to let this one bounce. And it takes a bounce down to the 16-yard line, and a big scrum for it. Texans think that the Packers touched it. Let's see.
Texans could very well
Texans
have
say
this.
They have it, and they do. They've got the ball. A muff punt by Green Bay. They touched it. Texans have it. MJ Stewart comes out of the pack with the rock.
And they would go on to score a couple plays later. Joe Mixon, they just leaned on Joe Mixon down there. Ran him.
Yeah, that was back in the glory days of the Texans, back where they were running the ball really well in the first half.
Glory days of the second quarter, exactly. Mm-hmm. Packers get the ball back. They go down. They score a touchdown to go up 14-10. Jordan Love hits Wicks. That was the sequence where there was the incomplete pass that looked like a lateral that D'Amico didn't challenge. And then the very next play, the Packers go over the top of D'Angelo Ross, which looked like it was partially on Ross, but also on it was cover two. So Kalen Bullock didn't get over there in time as well. So either way, it was bad. Packers go up 14-10. And then, look, if you can't move the football, you may need to get some of those invisible yards on special teams. Damian Pierce did them a solid on the ensuing kickoff.
McManus with the kickoff. It's going to be short. Inside the five, taken by Pierce. Over the 5-10, 15, cutting right 20, 25 to the 30. Now cutting left. He's got a little room. 35, headed for the left sideline, 40, and ridden down at the 43-yard line. Nice return. Damian Pierce, no flags.
Yeah, so this is when they get the ball at the Green Bay, or they get the ball at the Texans 43, so they start with good field position. And then they lean a lot on the short passing game and Joe Mixon to kind of move the ball into Green Bay territory. Ultimately, they stall out. Kyme Fairbairn kicks a 52-yard field goal, and the Texans cut the lead to 14-13. Then the ensuing possession, Jordan Love throws another present here.
Love, play action. Love with some heat on, fires downfield and intercepted! Bullock has it at the 45-yard line down there. Second pick of the game for the Houston Texans.
Very first play after the field goal to make it 14-13, Kalen Bullock with an incredibly athletic interception, Seth. That was He earned that one.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that is Kalen Bullock, my previous comments notwithstanding, there's so much upside with him. There's just so much upside. It's just a matter of him getting reps. Like, he'll be a better player by the end of the season than he is right now, and he's doing some really promising things right now.
Yep. So they lean on Joe Mixon again heavily, including a big 32-yard run by Mixon on second and six, a second play after the interception. They go down. They get another Mixon touchdown. They go into the locker room up 19-14 at the half. The sequence at the beginning of the half, man, I think a lot of times you can look at that, Seth, and say, oh, okay, this is where the adjustments are made. You know, you make adjustments at halftime. The Texans have been, I've been trying to tally up during the show here just how bad they've been offensively in the second half of games, and it's depressing to look at. I think it says it all maybe about where this coaching staff was yesterday, that the Texans come out of the locker room up 19-14. They get the ball to start the second half. So you got a chance, at the very least, you got a chance with Kyme Fairbairn's leg to put you up 8 in this game. It's one score, but it's the maximum one score. If not, maybe correct some things at halftime. Keep riding Joe Mixon and go down and get a touchdown. And now there's real game pressure on the Packers. Now they can't lean on that run game anymore either as much. They got to let Jordan Love throw the ball. And that's when, I won't say that's when good things happen, but it's when good things had been happening in this game thus far. He threw two picks in the first half. Instead, they go 3-and-out. The Packers get the ball back and go on a drive where they don't even get to third down. They convert on second down every time. Like, that's how chunky that drive was in terms of plays. And they go down and they get a touchdown that puts them ahead 21-19. And that was the score until there were zeros on the clock at the end of the game. Like, the defense has ruled the day after that.
Yeah, the adjustments in the second half for the defense, for the Packers defense, it seemed to me to be a lot more about just the front seven of the Packers having seen what the Texans were doing that day and them just physically destroying it because they anticipated it better in the second half. There were just multiple instances of defensive linemen looking at the formation, teeing off. You want to block me with Cade Stover? No, go die. Right. That's what I told you last week would happen, is that all these nice little whams and traps and everything, they're nailed fun it as a mix-up, but ultimately, once defensive linemen start anticipating it, they beat the crap out of smaller human beings trying to block them. Yep. And then when your offensive linemen are also getting the crap beat out of them, the running game falls and sputters and fails. And in they were physically beaten and whipped by a superior football players on the defense.
And here's some of the danger, and we're about to play a play here that really on the play sheet was a throwaway play because it was on a drive that ended with nothing. It ended with another Texans punt. They got the ball early in the fourth quarter with a chance to go down and maybe either make it more than they got a chance to go down there, make it either take the lead 22-21, which ultimately they did on the subsequent possession, or maybe go get a touchdown. But the fact that you can't move the football on the ground in the second half with Joe Mixon anymore, and B, that sometimes CJ Stroud has no choice but to get flushed out of the pocket, and yesterday felt the need later on in the game to scramble on his own. Here was CJ picking up what at the time was a key first down.
Second down and 9. Stroud shotgun, one back. They get right to the line. CJ takes the snap. Looking. Stepping up. He's going to run again. Angling left. 35 to the sideline. And he takes it across the 40. Took a shot as he picked up the first down at the 43.
I mean, they're in first and 15, which Seth yesterday probably felt like first and 30, given the passing game. So how did they get that first down? CJ scrambles for six, and then CJ gets his head taken off scrambling for 10 yesterday.
Right, and I think some of that, though, too, on those, the pass protection was okay on those scrambles. Yeah. It's just there was nothing for him downfield. Yeah. This is where, at some point, the quarterback also has to take responsibility for pass protection, has to take responsibility for what you're doing versus the blitz. People keep saying, why don't they just run more screens if the blitz is an issue? They run screens. They suck at it. They're awful at it. They can't do it. Nope. The defense sees it coming a mile away. That comes down to execution. Some of the pass protection issues. And then sometimes just CJ taking the easier receptions, getting rid of the ball quickly. Yeah. I think there's room for improvement there. Mm-hmm. It's a mangled mess offensively.
Yeah. Last one we'll play here, then we'll start acknowledging people from the weekend. This is a play that if they had gone on to win this game, it would have been one of the key plays. You know, it would have been a play that we're talking about maybe more than we are than just this throwaway here. But I do want to acknowledge it in this segment only because it was good to see, like, CJ, despite having the worst statistical day of his career, and probably, honestly, the worst day just in terms of him being chased all over the field. And he's had a lot of ones where he's been chased all over. This one was bad. This pass to Xavier Hutchinson to keep that drive alive. 3rd and 10 at the Green Bay 23. Now, the Texans were in field goal range, so there were 2 minutes and 42 seconds left. So, ultimately, they wound up kicking a field goal anyways because it felt like that's what they preferred to do. But they kept the drive alive here. C.J. Stroud rolling to his right and leaning backwards throws an absolute laser. It reminded me of the Nico Collins 3rd and 11 play in Week 1 against the Colts. And hits a sliding, diving Xavier Hutchinson to keep the drive alive.
3rd down and 10 at the 23-yard line of Green Bay. CJ in the gun, Dare in the backfield. All-out blitz. Stroud in trouble. Scrambling to his right. Throws right sideline and caught! What a catch! Xavier Hutchinson diving for the first down reception at the 12-yard line. The play of the game!
It was. To that point, Vandy nailed it. It was the play of the game to that point. Now it gets lost in the shuffle. Because from there, literally, the next play, they ran it down to the 2-minute warning after that play. And from there, it just turned into one massive collective team brain fart after that. Like, that Hutchinson play may as well have been a $1,000 bill that you proceeded to light on fire after the 2-minute warning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was just so frustrating. So frustrating.
I guess just by way of illustration, we've always said, all right, you're a good rushing attack if you can run the ball when you need to run the ball,
yes.
Right? So that final drive, which yielded a field goal, and yet when you got down into the red zone and you're trying to run the ball and eat up clock, yeah, you're thinking, yeah, the first half we did this and Joe Mixon was really good running the ball in the red zone. On that final drive, here are Joe Mixon's runs. 1 yard, 4 yards, ooh, -1. Then he had a 12-yarder,
yep.
-1, yeah. -2, yeah. -3.
Yeah.
Like, his final three carries of the game were for negative yardage.
Like,
it was just the absolute epitome of not running the ball when you really need to run the ball.
Yeah, yeah. It was. There was so much stuff in this game that was just such a microcosm of what this offensive line is right now. So, coming out of the 2-minute warning, they run Joe Mixon up the middle, and it's -2 yards. Green Bay burns their first timeout. Next, so there's 1:56 left. Next play, they run it up the middle, left guard, Joe Mixon, -3 yards. It's 3rd and 15. Green Bay
that
burns.
That one, both Kenyon Green and Titus Howard got destroyed by their individual defensive linemen. That wasn't a fancy look or anything. That was just, it was well blocked except for the two guys who got destroyed.
Green Bay burns their second timeout. There's 1:52 left now. So logic would dictate, like, okay, we've got them to burn their two timeouts. Let's at least make sure they burn their third timeout. And now they've at least got to operate once we kick this field goal here. After we run it up the middle again, or, you know, do something conservative that keeps the clock moving, a screen maybe. I mean, you know what you're really good at? Getting tackled 2 yards in the backfield on a screen. That would have kept the clock moving. More so than the play you chose to run or the pass you chose to throw, CJ, which was an incomplete pass to Tank Dell along the right sideline where if he catches it, he slides out of bounds and it's 4th and 7. And you're still kicking a field goal. Like, you ran a play on a drive where after the 2 minute warning, you run two plays that burn the two of the three timeouts the Packers have left, as opposed to just getting the, you know, kind of the, okay, the settling for the consolation prize, which is make them burn all their timeouts and let's kick a field goal. You run a play where 99% of the outcomes are stopping the clock.
Right, and I mean, the DB was up at the line. I don't know if CJ was anticipating him bailing out or something, but based on the coverage they got, that was the route they ran, and that was so. I don't need to hear Bobby Slowick say, "Well, there was a miscommunication, or we should have done this, or we should have done that." This is multiple times now where you've burned yourself with throwing the intentional grounding from a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
That was, you know, when they either should have run the ball or at the very least run something. Oh, well, there was a miscommunication on the route. No, there's no excuse for that.
No. Nope.
I don't want to hear about the reasons things went wrong when you put them in peril's way.
Yeah.
You're playing the game of eating a clock. Even as you're getting destroyed in the run game, you're playing the game of eating a clock. And then all of a sudden you abandon your strategy.
Well,
Sean, they abandon their chosen strategy there at a time where they're just trying to get Green Bay to use their timeout.
Totally, dude. Totally. And even if coming out of the 2 minute warning, part of the conversation was, hey, let's keep the clock moving and at least get them to burn their three timeouts and run three conservative plays. You know, you're probably not getting a first down. You're probably kicking a field goal with Kaimi there. You know, whatever it ended up being, 35-yard field goal. I would submit that that's too early to have burning their timeouts be a primary goal. Like, they're still, at that point, if they burn their third timeout and you kick a field goal, they're still getting the ball back with like a minute 40 to go. And then your strategy at that point on the ensuing kickoff was kicking the ball out of the end zone, which gives them the ball at the 30 and burns no clock. So they've got like a minute 40 to get 35 or 40 yards and get in field goal range. A good NFL offense doesn't need timeouts to move the ball 40 yards in a minute and a half.
Yeah.
It's just, bad day. Bad day for D'Amico, the game manager, yesterday, man. I hate to see it. All right.
It's just everything feels bad offensively right now.
Yeah.
In so many ways, including that, even I thought that with Nico out, there would still be more opportunities downfield.
Dude.
Where there just there aren't. Either that or just the pressure is getting there too quickly for it to develop.
Yeah.
But even on the plays where CJ does have time, teams can just sit back and take it away and play coverage, and there you go.
Let's start acknowledging people, because that's actually a good place to start, Seth, when you lay it out that way. We acknowledge every Monday big performances from over the weekend, or people in this case that were big performers early in the year that we just missed. But as you're saying that, I feel like we need to acknowledge Nico Collins.
Acknowledge me!
We're going to acknowledge you, Nico, because we miss you tremendously right now. And we're praying for you and your hamstring, and we're praying for you to get well soon. Really soon. Like, by the Detroit game in Week 10 soon. We know by rule you can't come back for the Colts game this week, which really sucks, Nico, if you're listening right now, because you're amazing against the Colts every time, it seems like. Since CJ got here. But just be well by the time you're, by rule, allowed to come back, which is the Detroit game, because I can't watch much more Nico Collins-less football with this team right now, Seth.
No.
Bad watch.
Well, we were saying the same thing about Joe Mixon-less football. So now it just really comes back to, okay, it's Mixon-less and Nico-less.
Yeah.
We've only seen one precious real moment of those two being on the field together.
Against the Colts, and they both ate that day. They both ate.
Did Anthony Richardson break the 50% barrier yesterday?
I know you know the answer to this. You check that like you check your blood pressure, my man.
I believe he was 10 for 24. I have a hard time doing math in my head, but I'm pretty sure 10 ain't adding up to half.
That stat you're good on. I know. We can count on
50%.
Anthony Richardson's completion percentage. You love that he doesn't crack the 50%
barrier. Did C.J. Stroud complete more than 50%?
He did not yesterday, actually.
No, he did not.
We're in the glassiest of glass houses this weekend for sure.
Yeah.
Let's acknowledge Joe Mixon while we're talking about him. He was great yesterday. He got 115 yards on 25 carries. Feel like a lot of it is Joe Mixon. You know, I can't wait to see how much of that was after contact. He runs. He got two touchdowns too, including this one right here.
Mixon in the backfield. Stroud under center. First and goal at the 4. Motion by Dell to the right. Handoff Mixon starting left and taking it straight ahead for the touchdown. Joe Mixon, his second of the day.
Yeah, there you go, man. Mixon.
A lot better in the first half than the second half. And a lot of plays, I was just kind of going through real quickly this morning on the All-22 and checking off, you know, like, okay, plus or minus on the offensive line, on the blocks, on the run plays.
Yeah.
And there were a lot more pluses in the first half.
Yeah.
In the second half, started to be a lot more minuses. Kenyon Green's name is jotted down, scribbled down quite a few times. And they all take their share. Titus Howard at one point. You know, Stephon Diggs at one point on one of those goal line runs. It was on Stephon Diggs, but going back to what Romo was saying during the game, these condensed formations where you're asking wide receivers and tight ends to block much larger human beings doesn't always work out that well unless you got some genuinely ferocious George Kittle types, and they don't. They don't have a George Kittle type.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you that. I mean, look, if you're playing behind somebody on this offensive line, you're a reserve. Yeah. There's probably an indication as to maybe where you are in the league or whatever. And this is not meant out of disrespect. This is just, you know, reserves are reserves, starters are starters. Do you think we see any sort of mixing and matching on the O-line this week after that performance? Like, hey, Jarrett Patterson at left guard running with the ones at practice this week.
Right. Can we say, could it be any worse?
Yeah, right.
Right.
We'll be back,
could it be any worse if we just put Jarrett Patterson there?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. You think we see that? You think we see that this week?
No.
I don't either. I
like that. It's just that my favorite thing to watch on the Texans offense when they try to run the ball is the various guys who are pulling but are kind of like tiptoeing around like they're cat burglars. Trying to figure out exactly, which door should I enter next?
Right.
Hey, why are you on the ground, CJ? Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Hey, Joe Mixon, why didn't you run? Wait, just give me a minute, Joe. I got to figure out who I'm going to block here.
Yeah.
That guy looks... No, I'm going to go with this guy. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Brutal. Neville Hewitt.
Acknowledge me.
We don't need to play the highlight, Ben. We just played it in the previous segment. But Neville Hewitt, I thought, other than the back suplex, the belly-to-back suplex that he did on that one guy to keep a drive alive, would have been like 3rd and 10, and Neville Hewitt decides, I'm just going to pick this guy up and drop him on his head and pick up a 15-yard penalty. Other than that, I thought Neville Hewitt had a pretty good day yesterday.
I thought even with that, I went back to wrestling rules here, like actual wrestling rules, you know, Olympic-style wrestling.
Yeah.
That was... Now, in wrestling, if he had genuinely slammed him, it wouldn't have counted. But he actually got some loft, exposed his back, and then let him go.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, the player didn't actually get slammed.
Right.
I felt like Neville Hewitt was flagged for magnificence there, more so than any actual violence, because he let him go after he had after he had completed.
But
the
you're not
play.
Allowed to pick him up, Seth. You're not allowed to by rule.
You're not allowed to pick him up and slam him. He picked him up and then let him go. Go watch the play again. He doesn't actually hit the ground all that hard.
He landed right on his shoulder.
But not his head.
No, that's true.
That is a 5-point throw, high-amplitude
throw. It was a concussion-friendly suplex by Neville Hewitt.
Yes.
You're right. I'm going to acknowledge him again. And
acknowledge
screw the refs.
Me.
Yeah. Hey, let's get to some of these other ones that are.
And listen, in amateur wrestling, it's a suplex.
Yeah,
okay?
It's a suplex.
So like that, and that was a suplex. A suplex. Yeah, you're trying to slam them onto the canvas in the middle of the pro wrestling ring.
Yeah,
that was a suplex.
Right. Saquon Barkley.
Acknowledge me.
17 carries, 176 yards, and this touchdown right here.
Hurts calling for the ball. Hurts. Gives it to Barkley. He pushes. He shoves. He is into the end zone. Touchdown! His fifth rushing touchdown of the season.
Now, why am I acknowledging Saquon Barkley? He had a hell of a day. I mean, that's one reason to acknowledge. Why on this particular Monday am I acknowledging Saquon Barkley? Because that performance was in a 28-3 Eagles win over his former team, the New York Giants. And I can only imagine how this guy is feeling today. These two guys, actually, but particularly the one that sounds like this in this cut.
What's the latest? Just on the Saquon thing.
I just got a text that Chicago's driving the price up and Philly's out. I don't know if that's true or not.
Mm.
Which I don't know if I'll make a couple calls. I don't even know if that's gonna happen, but
I'm gonna have a tough time sleeping if Saquon goes to Philadelphia. I'll tell you that, as I've told you, just being out. I've been around enough players, so but he's the. He's the most popular player we have by far.
Yeah.
10 yards a carry in his return to MetLife Stadium.
It's like the whole, do you think anybody has told Mora yet that Joe Shane made a fool of him during Hard Knocks? Do you think he's been clued in on that yet?
I hope so.
That Joe Shane spent that entire season of off-season Hard Knocks basically double-talking and trying to gaslight everybody in the building to thinking that nobody would actually want Saquon. Nobody would even want him, really? Like, who's going to actually... Who really wants a... Certainly not the Eagles. He says that in one of the meetings.
Yeah.
Eagle, why would the Eagles go for Saquon Barkley? You know, it just... There's no way. There's no way that you can let him keep his job. He publicly cuckolded you.
Yeah.
In front of the world.
Yeah.
That was the HBO audience.
The more you listen to it, that whole, Chicago's driving the price up and Eagles are out. That's what I'm hearing on my... But that was get out of my office, old man. That's what that was. What's going to get him out of here fastest?
I mean, and that's when you're the billionaire who's paying a guy millions of dollars to do his job. Yeah. You don't want to be... just don't make it so public that you're... That you're just trying to pull the wool over my eyes and sucking at doing it as well.
Yep.
You know?
Sunday Night Football last night, a game you could hear on Sports Radio 610. The Steelers beat up on the Jets. The Jets jumped out to a 15-3 lead in this game, and the Steelers went on to score 34 unanswered points by my math. 37-15, the final score. I can't bring myself to acknowledge Russell Wilson, even though he threw this touchdown to George Pickens.
Wilson gets the snap, back to pass, throws a fade, right corner of the end zone. Pickens is there, makes the catch, touchdown Steelers. An 11-yard touchdown from Russell Wilson to George Pickens.
Yep.
The first touchdown catch of the year for Pickens, and the Steelers have pulled within three.
Okay, so there you go. That was Pickens is so talented, man. He's such a head case, though. I can't acknowledge Russell Wilson, Seth. I will acknowledge Mike Tomlin, though.
Acknowledge me!
He got a lot of heat for switching to Russ. You know, you're 4-2. Justin Fields is doing something. He's not the greatest passer in the world. And maybe George Pickens is going to have a nervous breakdown by the bye week at some point here because he's not getting the ball. He's painting stuff on his eye black to, hey, I'm open, that kind of stuff. But you're winning football games with Justin. This is the first time a 4-2 team has benched a quarterback.
Yeah.
It might have been the right move, man. Russell Wilson, 264 yards passing and two touchdowns last night.
I couldn't watch a lot of this game. I was getting ready for KHOU Sports Extra every Sunday night.
Yep.
Around about 10:30 or so. The gist I got from following on social media was that Russell Wilson had some really well chosen, poorly thrown footballs.
It wasn't great.
You can call him back. It's always funny with a back shoulder or underthrown ball, whether people whether they want to credit the guy with actually making a good play or whether it's just, oh, this quarterback is getting bailed out by George Pickens.
Yeah, they, right, where they're getting bailed. Well, and the defense put them in some really good spots in this game.
Yeah.
Beanie Bishop, the rookie safety, had a couple of picks in this game, including one. He had one that was, should have been a pick six. He got tackled at the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
The defense turning Aaron Rodgers and the Jets over. By the way, Devontae Adams in his Jet debut, 3 catches, 30 yards on 9 targets. So 3 of 9 for 30 yards, throwing the ball in old DA's direction last night.
There are things that, even though the Steelers were winning, I try to look at this from the coach's perspective. I mean, I'm guessing there's a lot of things that they feel they could be doing that they can't do with Justin Fields just because of Russell Wilson's experience and what have you. And, I mean, you go back to, various other quarterback decisions. When they benched Alex Smith for Colin Kaepernick, Alex Smith was playing pretty well, but there were some things that Colin Kaepernick could do physically that Alex Smith couldn't do with his arm, just his ability to threaten deep. It's a lot easier to be, philosophical about it right now after a victory, but I understand the appeal of a Russell Wilson despite him not having played good football for the last 2 years.
Yeah, it worked, and I'll give Russ credit. In the post game, I think it's Melissa Stark, who's the sideline reporter for NBC, I think. I'm not totally sure. But whoever it was tried to
it's
get...
It's either her or Craig Sager. It's one of those two. I confuse them a lot.
R.I.P. Yeah. Craig Sager.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's definitely not Craig Sager.
No.
Yeah.
Whoever it was tried to get him to say his new Steeler catchphrase, win the seventh. He wouldn't do it. He said, we'll save that for later in the year. Good job, Russ. Don't be baited into that.
Sounds to me like the trademark hasn't gone through yet. He's just trying to be sure he wants to be sure everything gets approved.
It's held up in legal right now.
Kind of a long process,
All right, last one. And we're giving away some U of H Utah tickets here in a few minutes, so stay tuned for that. We're giving away a 4-pack of tickets. I'd like to acknowledge Satan,
Acknowledge me.
He got the World Series he wanted. Satan got the World Series he wanted. The Yankees and the Dodgers. Satan got his wish.
It's good to acknowledge
Satan. I got to acknowledge Satan. He wanted this World Series in the worst way, and he got what he wanted. When Satan wants, Satan gets, and he got the Yankees versus the Dodgers. Who are we rooting for in Yankees-Dodgers, Seth?
Oh, this is difficult. Yeah. I'm going to have to think on this. This is going to be harder than the Circle of Swarm this week. I'll give you my answer. When's the first game?
Good question. I think tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Yeah. I'll give you my answer.
I think it might be Thursday.
Morning.
I think it might be Thursday. So you get.
I'm going to delay as long as possible. Okay. If it's Thursday, I'll wait until Thursday morning.
9:59 on Thursday. That's when you're going to. I don't even have the calendar yet. So yeah, I'm not sure when the first game is. Largely because I hate these two teams. I do not plan on watching this World Series, if at all. Like, maybe corner of my eye, if at all. I'm rooting for the Yankees. I rooted for the Yankees against the Guardians already, so rooting for the Yankees is something I've already kind of stretched my hammies out doing.
You've already popped that membrane.
I hate the I said last week, the one outcome with these four teams left, Guardians, Yankees, Mets, Dodgers, the one outcome I cannot have is the Dodgers winning the World Series. I need their only World Series since Kirk Gibson to be a COVID asterisk World Series, and their fans are worse than Yankee fans to me. Yankee fans are just garden variety obnoxious. Dodger fans are a bunch of crybabies. And by the way, crybabies that a lot of them like to beat people up at Chavez Ravine with weapons.
Yeah, they're big men when they've got a knife and you don't.
Right.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I will say this.
I watch a lot of TikTok videos on how to defend myself against a knife attacker.
Yeah.
And almost all of them are BS, you can tell. from what I can tell, the best way to take on somebody who has a knife is to just accept that you're going to get stabbed at
right.
least once.
Try to call 911.
Yeah. You got to just be sure it's a non-lethal blow.
Right. Just give me right here. Just a flesh
wound. Unless you really know what you're doing.
No vital organs.
I'm just
going
to go down and do self-defense at the Y. That crap ain't flying.
Yeah. Jets and the Mets lost on the same night, so that's kind of cool. That was kind of good. I'll acknowledge the sports gods for that one real quick. Thanks.
Acknowledge me!
Jets and Mets fans, I think, are the crossovers. Giants-Yankees on the one hand and Jets and Mets on the other. They both lost last night, so that was kind of cool. Let's give away the tickets. U of H in Utah, 713-572-4610. Call now. Caller number 5 wins a 4-pack of tickets. It's the Cougs and the Utes on Saturday, 713-572-4610. Caller number 5 wins a 4-pack of tickets to see the Cougs play Utah. It's Saturday, 6 p.m. Weather going to be awesome. We're doing this all week long, so keep listening for your chance to win here on Sports Radio 610. All right, up next, final segment. We'll hand things over to John Harrison, Mark Vandermeer on Texans Monday at the top of the hour. We got Texans-Colts now. This game is a whole lot more meaningful after yesterday than it looked a couple of weeks ago. How meaningful? We'll lay it out for you coming up next.
The Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast. Good text here.
Oh.
And, it lays out, I think, where we're at. And the topic on the station today, I'm sure, both in the next couple hours with Texans Monday, as well as in the loop, in the drive, and no Area 45 tonight because it's Monday Night Football. But the Packers and the Texans and rehashing everything that happened yesterday will be the big topic yesterday. There are plenty of angles to continue to dig into with this, but this loss yesterday combined with a win by the Colts over a very undermanned Dolphins team, at least at quarterback right now, has set up, I would say, the biggest Colts-Texans game at NRG Stadium since these two teams met in the 2018 postseason in the Colts with Andrew Luck about 8 quarterbacks ago for the Colts, beat Deshaun Watson,
yeah,
recently injured and out for the season with the Browns, beat the Texans 21-7, I believe was the score that day, against the Texans. This is the biggest game between these two teams at NRG Stadium in about 6 years, and I think a texter sums it up perfectly here. So this game against the Colts this week is essentially the difference between a virtual tie with both teams being 5-3 or the Texans having a de facto 3-game lead in the division, because if they win, they'll be 6-2, the Colts will be 4-4, but the Texans will have won both of the games against the Colts. Honestly, this is as close as you can get to a Week 8 potential division clincher for the Texans, you know what I mean? And I know what happened last year. They're probably saying the same thing in Jacksonville about the Texans game in week 12, where they beat the Texans to go to 8-3, and the Texans were 6-5, and the Jags had that win over them here at NRG Stadium. They're probably saying the same thing, and now I'm saying it with more than half the season to go. I'm just talking about the math. And the fact of the matter is, the Texans, as angry as we are today, they are 5-2 with four games left in the division that they are going to be fairly significant favorites in if things continue to hold up, even with this bad offensive line. They're a 6-point favorite against the Colts. They should win this game at home this weekend. Bad offensive line or no bad offensive line. This is a big game, man. This is a game that has a lot of
it's
juice.
It's a huge game. No, and honestly, if I had to put the Texans into a tier right now, mm-hmm. I won't do quartiles. Let's say it was five tiers in the NFL.
Okay.
I think they're still smack dab in the second tier.
I agree.
And including the game yesterday against another second tier team in the Green Bay Packers.
Agreed.
So they're certainly not up in the Vikings or Ravens or any of that category of game or team. But they're up there, but they're very clearly stuck there without that getting into that next gear.
Yeah.
At some point, whether it's return to health of Nico Collins and a bunch of the defensive starters or whatever it might be as simple as that. But they haven't demonstrated enough of the things they need to do versus really good teams. And I'm including the Bills game in that, too. There's a reason the Bills went out and got Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
So that's where they are. And but if you're if you lose to the Colts, you're not a tier two team anymore.
No, you're not.
Now you're right there, smack dab at three. It's a big game in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no question about it. It's a huge game. Of all the football I've been watching, Seth, over the last few weeks, because this is always. How good you are is as much a snapshot of the last few weeks as it is your body of work for the whole season, you know?
Yeah.
It's in terms of what are you right now. The teams that I watch that I feel like the Texans would just get overwhelmed by right now, off the top of my head, if you played them on a neutral field, certainly if you played them on their home field, are the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Lions, and the Vikings. It's those teams.
Offense versus that Chiefs defense.
Yeah.
Don't even talk to me about Pat Mahomes. It would be a nightmare, I think. The team that showed up yesterday would have gotten throat punched by the Chiefs defense.
And I think you'd get throat punched by the Ravens offense right now. Even though the Texans defense has played very well, until I see them defend Lamar Jackson effectively with Derrick Henry next to him now.
Yeah. It would be really, really bad. Derrick Henry would get 200 yards rushing.
And it'd be bad on both sides of the ball. I think it would look a lot like the playoff game last year. So Chiefs, Ravens, the Lions are a very good football team right now, and the Vikings are a very good football team right now.
Mm-hmm.
You've already been beaten by the Vikings. Man, that Lions game on Sunday Night Football, I don't even want to think about that right now.
Look, I don't want to do the whole college football playoff thing, but in terms of just common opponents and what have you, both the Packers and the Texans got absolutely throttled by the Vikings. I know the final score looks like it was a close game between the Packers and the Vikings. No, the Vikings destroyed the Packers. So the Vikings are a whole different category right now than either of the Packers or the Texans.
Yep. Interesting question on the text page. Do you think the Packers gave the blueprint on how to expose our offense?
This is the problem. A lot of the things that were given the Texans issues yesterday were the exact same things that the Colts were doing in week one.
Yes.
Some of these overload looks that they show that where you got three defensive linemen on one side, it throws the Texans into such disarray in their pass protection. And they don't know what they're doing. On one play, it was either Dari Ogunbowale or Laremy Tunsil who really screwed up bad mentally. This was an annoying one because I put it out there and I said one of two. This, you know how it goes. I talk to my offensive line consortium.
Yeah.
And they'll always say, it could have been one of two or one of three things.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those two guys. There are a lot of people who are like, no, clearly, Seth, this is what was happening. No. They saw yesterday from that's been giving them issues since week one, they still look like they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They still look completely lost and hopeless.
The Packers, the only thing the Packers gave in terms of a blueprint was the fact that you can bang on that button literally every play if you want to. You don't have to be selective about doing any of these things. just do them. They can't defend them right now.
It's really a lot of the cute stuff that worked last week versus the Patriots. Once the Packers realized, oh, okay, I see what you're doing here. Yeah. Oh, you think you're going to run a counter, do you? Yeah, you're cute.
Yeah.
And then I kick you in the face.
Yep.
That's what the Packers defense did in the second half.
They
physically manhandled offensive linemen and tight ends and wide. Like anybody who was trying to block was just getting physically manhandled.
I'll toss this final little grenade right into the everybody is critical of Bobby Slowick room right now on the way out.
Yeah.
The Texans have scored 6 touchdowns in the second half of football games this year. They played 7 games. They've scored 6 second-half touchdowns. 2 of them came in week 1 against the Colts. 2 of them came last week against the Patriots. In the other 5 games, they've scored 2 second-half touchdowns. 2. It's a miracle they're 5-2 right now, in a way. I mean, that's ridiculous.
No, well, it really is. I mean, no, and it goes to almost every game this year other than last week. It was one where it was either a nail-biter or it shouldn't have been a nail-biter. As we've been saying all along, even after victories, they're just clearly not firing on all cylinders.
They're not. They got to fix it, or it's going to be, at best, they're topping out where they were last year, at best.
And they're good enough on paper that, yeah, this gets coordinators fired.
Yep.
You know?
It does.
It might be D'Amico's first really, really hard decision is that you got to move in a different direction.
That's a great topic. We'll save that. We may put a pin in that one for tomorrow. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies to you as well.
Thank you very, very much. We will see all of you tomorrow at 6 a.m. John Harris, Mark Vandermeer are up next.